Hi everyone! As you may or may not know, this past week, we had some disruptions due to an issue with our website, so there may have been a few hiccups with our podcast feeds this week. Everything has pretty much been restored to normal by this point, but if you notice that something isn't working properly, or some of our episodes appear to be missing from your feed, feel free to contact us and let us know, and we'll make sure the issue is resolved. Thank you, and enjoy the episode. June 11th, 1980. Todmorden, England. The body of 56-year-old Zygmunt Adamski is found on top of a large pile of coal inside a coal yard. 5 days earlier, Zygmunt had vanished after leaving his home located 25 miles away, and his cause of death is determined to be a heart attack. However, there are a number of strange clues at the scene, including some unexplained burns on Zygmunt's head, and since his death occurred only hours before he was found, no one can figure out Zygmunt's whereabouts during the 5 days he was missing. Months later, the police constable who found Zygmunt's body describes a bizarre encounter with a UFO, leading to speculation that the two events might be connected, but the actual circumstances of Zygmunt's death remain unknown. After that, the trail went cold. Hello everyone, and welcome to this month's first Halloween-themed episode of The Trail Went Cold. I'm your host Robin Warder, and today we're traveling to the United Kingdom to explore what is undoubtedly one of the weirdest mysteries ever featured on this podcast, the unexplained 1980 death of Zygmunt Adamski. As you probably know, every October, it's become a tradition for The Trail Went Cold to count down to Halloween by releasing episodes about creepy mysteries which have some sort of Halloween slant to them. And here, we've got an unsolved mystery in which one of the primary theories involves a possible alien abduction. The subject of today's story, Zygmunt Adamski, was just an ordinary guy who inexplicably went missing after leaving his home to buy groceries, and his body would be discovered on top of a pile of coal in the town of Todmorden, 25 miles from his home. While his cause of death was determined to be a heart attack, and there were no obvious signs of foul play, no one could figure out how Zygmunt wound up at that location to begin with, and there are a number of odd clues to suggest that something truly out of the ordinary had taken place. This story would attain some additional notoriety 5 months later, after Alan Godfrey, one of the police constables who arrived at the scene that day, experienced what he believes was a close encounter with a UFO, which may have led to him being the victim of an alien abduction. The incident would eventually turn Godfrey into a quasi-celebrity in England, and of course, this led to speculation that perhaps the reason Zygmunt Adamski went missing for 5 days was because he was also abducted by aliens, who subsequently dropped his body in a coal yard when he succumbed to a fatal heart attack. Now, I'm sure many of you listeners are very skeptical about aliens, UFOs, and the paranormal in general, but even if you disregard this entire angle, that still doesn't change the fact that Zygmunt Adamski died under very bizarre circumstances which have never been adequately explained, so there's still one heck of a baffling mystery here. If Zygmunt's death was not actually connected to aliens, then what did happen to him? I featured this story in a Halloween-themed article I published at crack.com 5 years ago, so I thought it was time to finally put together a Halloween-themed episode about it. Anyway, before we get started, just a quick reminder that The Trail Went Cold is a weekly podcast, which is currently available for download on several platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. So if you like this podcast, be sure to subscribe to it, and please leave us a rating or review on any of those sites to help spread the word and garner us more exposure. The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so if you would like to learn how to support the show, please visit our page at patreon.com/thetrailwentcold. For as little as $1 a month, you can garner access to exclusive rewards, which may include stickers and thank you cards, early access to episodes, and bonus content. So with all that out of the way, let us now delve into the bizarre, unexplained death of Zygmunt Adamski. Our story begins in England in 1980, and our central figure is 56-year-old Zygmunt Jan Adamski. Zygmunt originally hails from Poland and fled the country to immigrate to England near the end of World War II. In 1951, Zygmunt married his wife, Leocadia Adamski, who goes by the nickname Lottie, and had also fled her native Poland during the war. The couple currently reside at a home on Thornfield Crescent in the suburb of Tingley, located in West Yorkshire near the city of Wakefield. Lottie suffers from multiple sclerosis and is now confined to a wheelchair, but after working 27 years as a coal miner at the Loft House Coilery, Zygmunt applied for early retirement in order to spend more time taking care of his wife. While Zygmunt's application for early retirement was rejected, he asked the company to review the decision. At this point, Zygmunt's cousin Laska and her son are visiting from Poland and have spent the past 2 months living at his residence. On June the 6th, Zygmunt and Laska spent the morning doing some shopping together in Wakefield before returning home to have lunch. At around 3:30 p.m., Zygmunt said he needed to pick up some potatoes, so he left to go to a nearby market. Since it was located only 100 yards away from his residence, Zygmunt decided to walk to the market and left his house and car keys behind, and a neighbor would later recall that Zygmunt said hi to him as he passed by. A clerk at the market would confirm that Zygmunt purchased some groceries and seemed to be in a cheery mood, but after he left, Zygmunt never returned home, and he would vanish without a trace. Lottie eventually contacted the police to report Zygmunt missing, and was left baffled by her husband's disappearance. The following day, Zygmunt had been scheduled to give away his goddaughter at her wedding, and had even prepared a speech for the event, so it did not make sense that he would have taken off willingly. For the next 5 days, Zygmunt would remain a missing person until he turned up in the town of Todmorden, located approximately 25 miles west of Tingley. At around 3:45 p.m. on the rainy afternoon of June the 11th, Trevor Parker returned to a coal yard where he was employed. The yard was owned by Parker's father, and located right next to the Todmorden railway station. When he arrived, Parker was shocked to discover Zygmunt Adamski's body lying on top of a coal heap which was about 12 feet high, so he contacted the West Yorkshire Police. An ambulance crew and two police constables, Alan Godfrey and Malcolm Agley, would arrive at the scene and climb up a pile of wooden railway sleepers in order to examine Zygmunt's body on the coal heap. Zygmunt had originally been found lying face down until the ambulance crew turned him over, but Godfrey would later describe his face by stating, quote, "Those eyes were staring up at me. They were wide open. He had a look of someone who had seen something or someone that had scared him to death. Something or someone put him on top of that pile of coal, and something scared him to death." End quote. There didn't seem to be any signs of footprints on the coal heap to suggest that someone had climbed to the top, nor were there any traces of coal dust on Zygmunt's clothing, so it was a big mystery how he wound up in that position. According to Trevor Parker, he had been working at the coal yard between 8 and 11 a.m. that morning, and confirmed that Zygmunt's body was definitely not there. Parker then took off for several hours, but said that he left the gates unlocked in case any deliveries arrived while he was gone. When he returned later that afternoon, Parker discovered Zygmunt's body, but no one reported seeing or hearing anything unusual during that time period. Anyway, once a post-mortem was performed on Zygmunt's body, his cause of death was determined to be a probable heart attack. Zygmunt did have a history of heart disease and bronchitis due to his heavy smoking habit and many years of working in the coal mines, but it was estimated that his actual death occurred sometime between 11 a.m. and 1 p.m., only hours before he was found. This meant that there was still a 5-day window when Zygmunt's whereabouts were unaccounted for, but there was no record of him having been treated at any hospitals, and he showed no signs of having lived on the streets. Furthermore, Zygmunt did not have any known connections to Todmorden, or any apparent reason to travel there. Zygmunt's clothing was in good condition, he appeared to have eaten well, and there was only one day's growth of stubble on his face, which seemed to suggest he had shaved at some point during the time he was missing. And there were a number of odd details involving Zygmunt's body, as even though he was found wearing a suit jacket and a string vest, his shirt was inexplicably missing. While Lottie recalled her husband wearing a suit jacket when he originally left their house, she said he was not wearing the vest. Zygmunt's jacket was not buttoned properly, his trousers were unzipped, and his shoes appeared to be fastened in a very hasty fashion. Alan Godfrey would later say that it looked like someone else had placed Zygmunt's shoes on his feet. It also turned out that Zygmunt's watch and wallet, which was believed to have contained about 20 pounds, were missing, and the groceries he purchased at the market when he was last seen were never accounted for. In addition, Zygmunt's hair had been crudely cropped short into a crew cut, but the most bizarre detail was a series of mysterious egg-shaped burn marks on Zygmunt's head, neck, and shoulders. The burns were believed to be 2 days old, and it was suspected that they were not caused by an open flame, but rather something of a corrosive nature. An odd, green-yellowy gel-like ointment had been applied to the burns, but when a sample of the ointment was sent to forensic scientists at the Home Office Laboratory in Wetherby for a chemical analysis, they were unable to identify it. Zygmunt also did not have any known ties to Todmorden, so no one could figure out what he would have been doing there to begin with. In a cruel twist of fate, the Lofthouse Coilery would send Zygmunt a letter informing him that they had reversed their decision not to grant him early retirement, but by that point, he was already deceased. An inquest was held into Zygmunt's death, and the coroner, James Turnbull, would return an open verdict. Turnbull believed that Zygmunt died at the same location where he was found, but he still ranked the situation as the biggest mystery he had ever encountered in his career, stating, quote, "If I was told a UFO took this man up and dropped him on the coal pile, I would only raise one eyebrow," end quote. The case would be subject to a security lockdown, as the West Yorkshire police were forbidden to talk about it with the press, and all the official case files were deemed to be classified and remain unavailable to the public to this day. At one point, a solicitor who represented Lottie Adamski asked for a transcript of the inquest, but his request was denied because the proceedings were classified. Much to their disappointment, neither Alan Godfrey nor his partner, Malcolm Agley, were called upon to testify at the inquest, but it wouldn't be long until Godfrey found himself embroiled in a bizarre mystery of his own. At the time, Godfrey was living in Todmorden with his wife and two children, and was a well-respected 6-year veteran with the West Yorkshire Police, who had already received 2 commendations for his investigative work. On November the 28th, 5 months after he discovered Zygmunt's body, Godfrey was on duty working an overnight patrol shift and was responding to a series of calls about a herd of cattle which seemed to have been disappearing and reappearing throughout the night. Apparently, one of the calls was from a woman who claimed she saw these cattle outside her bedroom window, but before she could walk outside, she was blinded by a flash of light and the cows suddenly disappeared. They had last been seen wandering around a local council estate, so at around 5 a.m., Godfrey drove out to the area to search for them. While driving on Burnley Road, Godfrey claimed that he saw a bright blue light in front of him, which he initially thought was a double-decker bus that had overturned. He continued to drive towards it, but when he was approximately 20 yards away, he realized that he was actually looking at a spinning, diamond-shaped object, which was about 20 feet wide and 14 feet high. It appeared to be hovering 5 feet above the road, but while the bottom half of the object was rotating, the top half remained stationary. Even though it appeared to be disturbing the trees on the sides of the road and causing leaves to swirl underneath it, the object did not make any noise, and Godfrey said he could not feel any vibrations from it. Godfrey attempted to call for help on both his car radio and handheld radio, but neither of them would work, so he started sketching the object on his notepad in order to document it. This is when the object suddenly vanished, But according to Godfrey, the next thing he knew, his vehicle was parked at a spot around 30 yards down the road, but he had no memory of driving there. Godfrey then drove back to the spot where he thought he had seen the object, but even though it had been raining, he noticed that the spot in the road was dry. Anyway, Godfrey immediately returned to Todmorden, but realized that more time had passed than he expected, and there were about 25 to 35 minutes which he could not account for. He also noticed that the sole on his left boot had been split, and he now had an unexplained itchy red mark on his left foot. Godfrey enlisted the assistance of another constable to help him keep searching for the missing cattle, and when they returned to Burnley Road, they discovered them in a field located behind a locked gate. Godfrey could not figure out how they got there, and curiously, even though the ground was wet and muddy, there didn't appear to be any hoof prints. Godfrey documented his odd experiences in his police report, and it turned out that a number of other witnesses, including three police officers, had also reported seeing bright blue lights in the area that night. However, within a week, Godfrey's report was leaked to the press and published in the newspapers, which caused both him and the West Yorkshire Police great embarrassment. Godfrey was eventually put in touch with a group called the Manchester UFO Research Association, aka MUFORA, and agreed to undergo hypnotic regression. He remained troubled by the fact that a 25 to 35 minute window of time had passed on the night of the incident, which he could not remember, so he wanted to attempt to recover these missing memories. While under hypnosis, Godfrey claimed that he had visions of his police car's engine coming to a stop and his radio filling with static before he was suddenly blinded by a beam of light which caused him to pass out. Godfrey then said that he woke up inside a room by what he described as eight small, humanoid, robot-like beings with heads shaped like lamps, a black dog, and a tall bearded man with a skull cap and a white gown. According to Godfrey, the man said his name was Yosef and communicated with him telepathically. After he instructed Godfrey to lie on a table, the robot beings removed his boots and studied his toes before instruments were placed on his arms and legs, causing him discomfort. And now I'm going to share what might be my all-time favorite story in the history of this podcast. In 1977, Godfrey had gotten into a violent altercation with three men while he was on duty and was kicked in the groin so hard that he wound up losing one of his testicles. Even though Godfrey and his wife had wanted to have more children, it seemed like his injury was going to make it impossible to ever conceive again. Well, guess what? Shortly after his encounter with the mysterious object, Godfrey and his wife were sleeping in their bed together when she claimed she was awakened in the middle of the night by a strange noise. Later that morning, the couple had sex for the first time since the violent attack, which cost Godfrey his testicle, and against all odds, she became pregnant again. A subsequent hospital checkup would reveal that he had become fertile again, so Godfrey wondered if the two events were somehow connected. Well, even though the entire incident seemed to reinvigorate his sex life, Godfrey claimed that it seriously hampered his police career. His alleged UFO encounter continued to get coverage in the press, and at one point, the infamous tabloid, the Weekly World News, published a story about it under the headline, "Death Strikes from Space." According to Godfrey, the unwanted publicity prompted his superiors to undermine him at every turn and continually transfer him around. After being violently assaulted on duty by a group of drunks, Godfrey was forced to retire from the police force due to serious injuries, but his notoriety did turn him into a bit of a celebrity, as he appeared on numerous talk shows to share his story, and eventually self-published a book titled Who or What Are They? However, Godfrey has acknowledged that the weird visions he experienced while under hypnosis may have been nothing more than a weird dream, and once stated, quote, "I never said I was abducted by aliens." As for Zygmunt Adamski's case, it would be re-examined in 2005 by a group called the British UFO Research Association, aka MUFORA. While they were denied access to the official files, they performed some new interviews and made this statement, quote, "Taking into consideration the nature of information obtained recently by someone who was a close family friend of Mr. Adamski and his wife, who we consider to be a reliable source, which alleges Adamski was held against his will, and that his unlawful detention ultimately led to his death. End quote. It turned out that Zygmunt was trapped in the middle of a heated family feud, and the main reason his cousin, Laska, and her son had been staying with him for 2 months was because she had recently taken out a restraining order on her husband. This was apparently going to cause potential friction at the wedding for Zygmunt's goddaughter, since the husband did not want Zygmunt to be involved. After performing a new investigation, Bufora concluded that Zygmunt may have been kidnapped by the husband or someone from his family and held in captivity in a shed for 5 days. At some point, Zygmunt may have attempted to escape, but accidentally wound up spilling battery acid on himself, which could have caused the mysterious burns on his upper body. Zygmunt then subsequently died of a heart attack before his captor disposed of his body at the coal yard in Todmorden. Bufora also learned that at the time of his death, Zygmunt had been undergoing an alternative form of medicine therapy known as moxibustion. The process involves a form of acupuncture treatment in which a small cotton-like material called mugwort is soaked in alcohol, placed in bamboo tubes, and lit on fire before they touch the skin, which could have provided another potential explanation for the burn marks. In the end, Bufora did not believe that Zygmunt's death was the result of anything UFO-related, but their theory has never been substantiated. So after 40 years, the actual truth about what caused Zygmunt Adamski's death remains unclear. So I guess you could say, the trail went cold. But before we continue, we would like to provide a quick shout-out to Treeing Yoga. Treeing Yoga is a niche accessible yoga channel on YouTube, currently specializing in gentle, post-concussion safe practices. These practices are carefully crafted with physiotherapist-prescribed eye exercises incorporated into them. Find Treeing Yoga at youtube.com/treeingyoga. That's youtube.com/TREEINGYOGA. Thank you, and enjoy the rest of this episode. Anyway, this marks the second time The Trail Went Cold has released an episode about an unsolved mystery involving alleged UFO involvement. Of course, the first one, which I covered on the podcast 3 years ago, involved the disappearance of an Australian pilot named Frederick Valentich, who went missing during a flight in 1978 after a cryptic final radio transmission in which he implied that he had encountered an alien spacecraft. That's the one UFO story which even complete skeptics find intriguing, because regardless of whether or not you believe in aliens, that doesn't change the fact that a man vanished without a trace, so there's still a big mystery here. And the same logic applies to Zygmunt Adamski. Even if you discount the possibility of UFO involvement, this guy still went missing for 5 days before he turned up dead under truly bizarre circumstances at a location 25 miles from his home, which he had no reason to be at. When I featured this story in that aforementioned Cracked article I published 5 years ago, I wrote, quote, "Look, we're not saying it was aliens, we're just saying that if it's not, then the real story is probably even weirder," end quote. Of course, at the time Zygmunt's body was found, I don't think that everyone was automatically assuming that he was abducted by aliens, but the theory gained a lot more traction when the coroner, James Turnbull, made the somewhat sarcastic comment to the press about a UFO dropping Zygmunt's body on the coal pile not long before P.C. Alan Godfrey would share his own story about a close encounter. Now, I do have to admit that there seemed to be a lot of reported UFO activity in England in 1980. In fact, at around midnight on the evening of June 10th, about 16 hours or so before Zygmunt's body was found, a couple living in Todmorden reported hearing a strange noise above their house, which they said sounded like water surges. When they went outside, they claimed they saw a green and red light suddenly appear above the roof and flash before it disappeared. This incident took place only about a half mile from the coal yard, so naturally, there has been speculation that the two events are connected. And just 1 month after Alan Godfrey's encounter, one of the most infamous UFO incidents in the history of England occurred. During the early morning hours of December the 26th and the 28th, personnel from the United States Air Force, who were occupying both the Royal Air Force Woodbridge and Bentwaters bases at that time, reported seeing a series of mysterious lights in nearby Rendlesham Forest, which they believed were UFOs. Of course, these particular UFO sightings occurred over 200 miles away from Todmorden, but it's easy to understand why people would be inclined to think that the events are all somehow connected. Incidentally, I should also mention that the name Adamski seems to keep popping up in UFO stories, as an infamous ufologist named George Adamski, no relation to Zygmunt, came to prominence during the 1950s after he published a series of books about encounters he had with Nordic aliens in California and his travels aboard their spaceships. I'm not going to delve into his backstory, but it's generally accepted by experts that George Adamski was a con artist who orchestrated a number of elaborate hoaxes. He died of a heart attack in 1965, but it's become a joke in UFO circles that perhaps these same Nordic aliens returned in 1980 to reunite with their old friend, but accidentally wound up abducting the wrong Adamski. Anyway, before I talk more about Zygmunt Adamski, I do have to address the UFO incident with Alan Godfrey, since these two events are linked together. I may have joked about the whole incident, where the alien supposedly repaired his sterility and allowed him to conceive a child with his wife, and I'm not even going to attempt to try and dream up a logical explanation to explain that. But I've also listened to a number of interviews with Godfrey, as he has not only appeared on television, but on a couple of UFO-based podcasts as well. I have to acknowledge that on the surface, Godfrey does come across as a nice, level-headed, down-to-earth person. At the very least, I don't think he's orchestrating an elaborate hoax, and I get the impression that he genuinely believes what he says happened actually did happen. While the visions he supposedly experienced while under hypnosis, which, for some reason, seemed to involve a bearded man named Yosef and a black dog hanging out with robot alien beings, do sound ridiculous, Godfrey would be the first person to tell you that this might have been nothing more than a weird dream which had no basis in reality. I will admit that I've always been fascinated by the concept of the missing time phenomenon, where people will talk about having undergone an experience where several minutes or hours will pass, but to them, it only felt like a few seconds, and they have no memory of what happened. And much of the time, these incidents will occur after these people claim they've seen some weird lights or a UFO, which make them believe they underwent some sort of alien abduction and had all memories of the experience erased. In Alan Godfrey's case, he recalled having instantaneously traveled 30 yards down the road inside his vehicle in a matter of seconds, even though 25 to 35 minutes apparently passed, which he could not account for. So of course that's led to speculation that he was abducted by this mysterious diamond-shaped object he saw before they dropped him back off. If you believe Zygmunt Adamski was the victim of an alien abduction, the missing time phenomenon could account for some of the weird discrepancies in his case, such as why he had only 1 day's worth of stubble on his face, even though he was missing for 5 days. It's also implied that the herd of cattle Godfrey was searching for on the night this incident took place might have been taken by the UFO, since they just seemed to disappear and reappear at will, and ultimately wound up at a location behind a locked gate, which they shouldn't have been able to access on their own. Well, regardless of whether or not you believe Godfrey's story is credible, the big issue is that it went public, which his superiors did not appreciate. Now, I addressed this a little bit during the episode I released several months ago about Don Rainboy Decker, but when a police officer is actually willing to go on the record about witnessing a paranormal occurrence, it's a pretty big deal. This sort of thing could potentially do serious damage to their credibility, because police officers are supposed to be known for having trustworthy observational skills. If Godfrey was asked to provide serious testimony in a criminal case, it could potentially be undermined by the fact that his alleged encounter with a UFO was now a matter of public record. Of course, this whole situation wasn't necessarily Godfrey's fault, since his story got leaked to the press without his knowledge, but I can see why it ultimately ruined his police career. Now, I'm not going to spend too much time dissecting Godfrey's story, because this is not a UFO podcast, but I should mention that in 2017, a ufologist named Russ Callahan came up with a potential alternate theory to explain a sighting. During the 1960s, a Finnish architect named Matti Shironen came up with a design known as a Futuro House, a residence which would be constructed in the form of a dome-shaped flying saucer and have a number of dark, oval-shaped windows. Less than 100 of these Futuro houses were ever produced, but one of them was built in Tobedon in 1971 and was reportedly still around in 1980. These houses were mobile and could be transported around by truck, so theoretically, if Godfrey came across a Futuro house being transported on Burnley Road during the early morning hours while it was dark, he could have mistaken it for a UFO. Godfrey himself is aware of this theory and has openly discounted the possibility that he saw a Futuro house. He may very well be correct, but I've seen photos of Futuro houses online, and they definitely look like flying saucers, so if you're a skeptic, this does provide a possible explanation for what happened. So now let's move back to Zygmunt Adamski's case. It has often been compared to another infamous UFO story, which took place just under 5 years beforehand, and involved an American forestry worker named Travis Walton. In November of 1975, Walton vanished while working in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest in Arizona, and like Zygmunt, Walton was missing for 5 days before he resurfaced and shared a vivid story about having been abducted by aliens. While skeptics believe that Walton's story was a hoax, the key difference is that he lived to tell about it, but Zygmunt Adamski turned up dead. What's unique about this case is that it doesn't appear that any foul play actually took place, as Zygmunt's cause of death was believed to be a heart attack. But even if his death was natural causes, that doesn't explain how his body wound up on top of a coal pile 25 miles away from his home in a town he didn't have any known connections to. And since he apparently died only hours before he was found, what were Zygmunt's whereabouts during the 5-day window he was missing? Given how the police were eventually banned from talking about this case with the press, and the official files and documents from the investigation have never been released publicly, you can understand why there has always been conspiracy vibes surrounding this story and speculation about alien involvement. I have to acknowledge that because the official documentation has been kept under wraps, there are so many different versions of this story online which often have contradictory details, so I apologize in advance if any of the information I present is inaccurate. I'm sure there are some sources out there that have gone out of their way to make the story sound as supernatural as possible. Of course, given that Alan Godfrey no longer works for the police, he has no restrictions about talking about this case during interviews, but even he is at a loss to provide a logical explanation for what happened. All that being said, given his own personal experiences, I would not be surprised if Godfrey has exaggerated certain details when sharing the story about finding Zygmunt's body. He always talks about how Zygmunt looked like he had a look of pure terror on his face, as if he had been scared to death, but I'm not sure if that necessarily proves he had an encounter with aliens or anything supernatural. Zygmunt wound up suffering a fatal heart attack, which is a pretty terrifying experience on its own, so that might account for why his face looked this way. Now, when Bufora conducted a new investigation back in 2005, they came to the conclusion that Zygmunt was likely abducted and held captive for 5 days over a family dispute before he succumbed to a heart attack. I think it says something that the organization devoted to UFO research ultimately settled on an explanation which didn't involve aliens, though I still have some issues with their theory, which I'll discuss momentarily. Given that Zygmunt Adamski just seemed like an ordinary, hardworking guy living a pretty ordinary life, you have to wonder why there would be so much secrecy surrounding an investigation where a guy like him died of natural causes. While there isn't much information about Zygmunt's personal life, one thing which does seem clear is that he was very devoted to his wife, Lottie, and had asked for early retirement from his job, so he could devote more time to taking care of Lottie and her struggles with multiple sclerosis. That's why when Zygmunt went missing, no one believed that he would have taken off on his own and left his invalid wife to fend for herself. Of course, since taking care of a spouse with MS is a daunting task, I've seen one theory pushed forward that perhaps Zygmunt might have been conducting an affair on the side in order to fulfill his needs. Well, I don't believe any evidence was ever found to support this theory, but it could provide a potential explanation for one of the weirdest details of this case. The manner in which Zygmunt was dressed at the time he was found made Godfrey suspect that someone else had haphazardly put his clothing and shoes on after he was dead. So, imagine a scenario in which Zygmunt succumbed to a fatal heart attack while having sex with someone he wasn't supposed to before this person dressed his body and disposed of it somewhere. However, the circumstances of how Zygmunt went missing do not suggest he was headed off to a secret rendezvous with a mistress. The only reason he left his house to begin with is because he needed to run to the market to get some potatoes, and since the clerk did verify that Zygmunt made a purchase there, that seems to indicate he was heading straight home. Furthermore, even though Zygmunt owned a vehicle, he left both his house and car keys behind because the market was only a 100-yard walk away, so it really does not seem like Zygmunt had alternate plans, and something must have happened while he was in the midst of walking home. Now, unfortunately, details about Bufora's investigation are sketchy, but the gist of the information they uncovered seems to be that the reason Zygmunt's cousin Laska and her son had been staying at the residence for the past 2 months is because she filed a restraining order against her husband in Poland. And this may have created enough friction that the husband had Zygmunt abducted and held in captivity for 5 days before he suffered his heart attack. But with the scant details we have available, there's a lot about this theory which doesn't make much sense. If Laska filed a restraining order against her husband, then you'd assume that the husband's primary motivation for traveling to England and getting Zygmunt out of the picture would be to go after Laska, but I see no indication that he made any attempt to visit Zygmunt's house. In some accounts of this story, it's reported that even though Laska and her son had been there for 2 months, they were planning to return to Poland shortly after the wedding of Zygmunt's goddaughter. Well, even though this wedding took place the day after Zygmunt disappeared, Zygmunt did not turn up for 4 more days, so why would he be kept in captivity that long? And if the husband originally hailed from Poland, where would he be holding Zygmunt captive? I find it interesting that Bufora specifically states that Zygmunt was kept inside a shed, but I'm not sure what information they found to make them think that. And I also find it odd that they attribute Zygmunt's mysterious burns to spilling battery acid on himself during an escape attempt. I'm not quite sure how a situation like that would unfold, as holding a man prisoner in the same room with battery acid does not sound like a logical idea. All that being said, since Zygmunt's clothing was in good condition, and he had shaved and eaten, it really does not seem like he was just living on the streets for 5 days, so he had to have spent that time at a location where someone took care of him, or he was able to take care of himself. He was also reported as having his hair cropped in a very crude fashion, as if someone gave him an unprofessional haircut. The detail about him having only 1 day's worth of stubble is weird, but I'm not sure I take that as evidence of an alien abduction, since what are the odds of him having a razor and shaving cream on board their spaceship? If Zygmunt was held against his will and succumbed to a fatal heart attack, I can definitely understand why the responsible party would dispose of his body, but that leads to one of the most baffling questions in this case. Why would you elect to place Zygmunt on top of a pile of coal next to a busy railway station in the middle of the day? According to Trevor Parker, he was absent from the coal yard for several hours that afternoon, but left the gates open in case any delivery stopped by. But how could the responsible party have known nobody would be there? Did they just drive by the yard and see the open gates and say, "Well, this seems like a good place to dump a dead body"? I'm sure there are plenty of remote locations outside of Todmorden to do something like that, with less risk of getting caught. Parker claimed that he left the coal yard at around 11 a.m. and return to discover Zygmunt's body at 3:45 p.m. However, the window of time to have placed Zygmunt there is probably smaller, as Peter Sutcliffe, a sub-officer from a local fire station, told police that he visited the coal yard to look for Parker sometime between 1 and 1:30 p.m., and maintained that he did not see a dead body on the coal heap. And yes, I'm sure many of you did a double take when you heard that name, because Peter Sutcliffe just happens to be the name of the infamous serial killer, the Yorkshire Ripper, who terrorized the area until his capture in January of 1981. But rest assured, this was an entirely different Peter Sutcliffe, so I think you can discount the possibility of Zygmunt being a victim of the Yorkshire Ripper. Now, one issue with figuring out how Zygmunt's body wound up on that coal heap is that there aren't any actual crime scene photos available. Since this story has been featured on a couple of British paranormal-themed TV shows, which feature reenactments of the scene, that's all we really have for visuals. It's been described that there were no footprints on the pile of coal to suggest anyone climbed up there, and no traces of coal dust on Zygmunt's clothing, almost as if someone had beamed his body to that spot from outer space. I know Godfrey said he had to climb a pile of wooden railway sleepers in order to examine Zygmunt's body, so I guess someone could have carried him up there and tossed him onto the coal. One alternate theory which has been presented is that Zygmunt climbed to the top of that coal heap himself. This could have been a similar situation to the George Owens case I featured on the podcast a few months ago, where Zygmunt possibly suffered a stroke and became disoriented, and wound up succumbing to his heart attack after he climbed up there. Yet that still wouldn't account for where he was during the previous 5 days. Like I just mentioned, it appeared that Zygmunt had been well cared for, but if he did become confused and forgot who he was, perhaps a good Samaritan found him wandering around and took him in. But of course, if he died in their care, there's no reason whatsoever for a good Samaritan to dispose of his body in a coal yard. A number of Zygmunt's personal items were missing, including his wallet, watch, and shirt, though he was still wearing a suit jacket and string vest. What's particularly odd is that while it sounds like Lottie confirmed that Zygmunt was wearing the jacket when he left their house, he was not wearing that vest, and it's unclear to me if they even owned such a vest to begin with. The only logical reason why someone would have any real need to get rid of the shirt is if there was some crucial evidence on it, such as, say, I don't know, battery acid, which spilled on there and wound up burning him. But that still doesn't explain why someone would dress Zygmunt in a string vest which did not belong to him. Now, one of the most heavily debated topics in this case are the odd burns that were found on Zygmunt's head, neck, and shoulders, as well as the mysterious gel-like ointment which were applied to them and could not be identified. I've already talked about the battery acid theory, but another proposed explanation is that the burns were caused by moxibustion, a traditional Chinese medicine therapy which involves burning your skin with a flaming material known as mugwort. Unfortunately, we do not have any photographs of Zygmunt's actual burns available in order to make a comparison, but I have seen photos of moxibustion burns online, and they do resemble the descriptions which have been provided. And since Zygmunt was undergoing moxibustion during that time period, it's not like they just pulled this theory out of thin air. If he had gone through it shortly before his disappearance, that might explain why he had those burns, but the problem is that the coroner believed the burns were around 2 days old at the time Zygmunt was found. So would Zygmunt really have undergone moxibustion during the 5-day window he was missing? I did a bit of research on moxibustion and learned that there are two forms of therapy, direct and indirect, and direct moxibustion has two separate categories, scarring and non-scarring. This means that even if Zygmunt was practicing moxibustion, that doesn't necessarily mean he would have received any burns unless he selected the direct scarring method. However, during my online research, I did find out that there are a number of ointments available that are used as a protective barrier between the skin and the flaming mugwort, which could provide a potential explanation for the mysterious gel-like ointment found on Zygmunt's burns. Granted, I have no idea if these type of ointments were available back in 1980, but if they weren't exactly mainstream, that might explain why the Home Office Laboratory were unable to identify it. This doesn't necessarily mean that it was an unknown substance from an alien world. I'm not going to say with 100% certainty that Zygmunt's burns were the result of moxibustion, as I have no idea when or where he could have gotten them during the time period he was missing, but I do think it's worth considering as a possibility. But the one thing which leans away from that is that the coroner believed the burns were caused by something corrosive, not an open flame. If true, then you can completely discount the moxibustion explanation, and maybe this does give more credence to Bufora's theory involving battery acid. No matter how you look at it, no theory in this case makes 100% complete sense, so I can definitely understand why people would leap to the explanation that Zygmunt was kidnapped by aliens for 5 days before he died of a heart attack, so they decided to deposit his body on top of the coal heap. But I always have to ask this question. If Alan Godfrey's alleged UFO encounter had not gone public months later, how would people interpret this case? Would anyone even be considering the possibility of a UFO abduction? I came across a website called The Iron Skeptic, which is run by a guy named Aaron Sekulich, who attempts to debunk and provide logical explanations for a lot of the more infamous UFO and paranormal cases out there, including this one. While his articles are always written in a very snarky, sarcastic tone, he did provide an interesting point in his article about Zygmunt Adamski. Sekulich recounted a story about how he once went out drinking on a rainy night and became separated from his friends, so he decided to go into an alley and climb into a dumpster to hide from the rain. However, he had become so intoxicated that he wound up falling asleep in there. Sekulich wrote that if he had somehow died of natural causes while inside the dumpster, his body likely would have been transported to a garbage dump somewhere before he was found. Since no one would have known his reasons for climbing into the dumpster in the first place, people would have automatically assumed the worst about his death and dreamed up some weird conspiracy theories, such as him being abducted and deposited at a garbage dump by aliens. Look, I'm not trying to say that Zygmunt Adamski got drunk and decided to climb onto a coal heap before he passed out and died of a heart attack, but I think Sekulich's story demonstrates how natural deaths caused by misadventure can wind up looking more mysterious than they really are when you don't know the full context. In Zygmunt's case, even if he did die of natural causes, I still don't think he wound up at that coal yard on his own, and at least one other person had to be involved, though I still don't have a logical explanation for why they would elect to dispose of his body at that particular location. Like I mentioned earlier, Bufora has clung to the theory that Zygmunt was abducted and held captive because of a family feud, but while I've already expressed my issues with that theory, it's still one of the more plausible ones. If the theory is accurate, it would be interesting to see the legal situation if an arrest was ever made, because technically, the responsible party did not commit murder, but they still broke the law by kidnapping Zygmunt and holding him against his will before they disposed of his body when he died of natural causes. I would still like to know what kind of information Bufora gathered in order to reach this conclusion, and if Zygmunt's death was the result of a family feud and has nothing to do with aliens, then you have to wonder why the authorities are continuing to remain so secretive about this case and refusing to release the official files. Unless more information is released, I'm not sure we'll ever learn the full truth about what happened, so this is likely destined to remain an unsolved mystery surrounded by wild speculation and UFO conspiracy theories. However, if you happen to have any information about the unexplained death of Zygmunt Adamski, please contact the appropriate authorities. But if you just have your own thoughts about what happened, feel free to leave me a comment or send me an email to robin.warder@icloud.com. That's robin.warder@icloud.com. Now the reminder that The Trail Went Cold is on Patreon, so please visit patreon.com/thetrailwentcold to learn how you can support our podcast and become eligible for some pretty neat rewards. We produced a bunch of exclusive bonus episodes for our patrons in tiers 2 and 3, and this past month, I released an episode about the 1982 disappearance of Sherry Ierley, which was featured on a rather infamous segment of Unsolved Mysteries, where a psychic pointed the finger at a potential suspect who may have been completely innocent. And for our patrons in Tier 3, I've also recorded another new audio commentary track, which can be played over a classic episode of Unsolved Mysteries. So to learn more information, feel free to visit our Patreon page. I'd also like to give a shout out to our most recent listeners who have signed up with us on Patreon this week, and they are Andrew S., Mona P., and Jonah M. Thank you all so much for your support. And before I bring this episode to a close, I would like to play a promo for another podcast. What Was That Like?
What Was That Like might just be the most intriguing podcast you'll ever hear. Each episode is a conversation with a regular person who has been through an extremely unusual situation, like Jamie, who discovered a stranger in her bedroom, or Alyssa, whose ex-boyfriend came to her work and set himself on fire, or Ramon, whose wife hired a hitman to kill him, or Ross, who at age 8 survived being shot in the head by his father. Real people telling their story firsthand. Listen and subscribe on any podcast app or at whatwasthatlike.com.
In addition, I need to mention that next Saturday, October the 24th, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, we are going to be holding another one of our live Watch Together marathons in which we view classic segments of Unsolved Mysteries. Given what month this is, we are going to be having a special Halloween-themed live watch containing some of the more memorable paranormal segments from Unsolved Mysteries, and you can chat with myself and your fellow listeners. You can find more information, as well as the link to our screening room, on our Facebook and Twitter pages, and also in the show notes for this episode. Once again, we will be holding this next Saturday, October the 24th, at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I also just wanted to give another shout-out to my supporters at the Unsolved Mysteries message board at the Sitcoms Online Forum and the Unresolved Mysteries subreddit. I need to provide a big thanks to McGill Foote, who edits and assembles this podcast together for me, and Vince Nitro, who composes the eerie music you hear on every episode. And of course, as you probably heard, we've been playing a special Halloween-themed version of the Trail Went Cold theme this month. If you haven't already, you can like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, or leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. Anyway, like I mentioned in the intro, since we're in the month of October, we are going to continue spending the rest of the month presenting episodes about unsolved mysteries which have some sort of Halloween slant to them. So have yourself a good week and join us next Wednesday for our next Halloween-themed episode of The Trail Went Cold. We'll be right back.